Welcome to Reboot Republic, the podcast that goes behind the headlines and looks at the big issues in this republic of inequality. We are the podcast of solutions and the podcast of hope, and I'm your host, Rory Hearn. And today I'm absolutely delighted to be joined in a partnership venture with the National Women's Council of Ireland and Reboot Republic for International Women's Day, which takes place on March 8th. Orla O'Connor, the director of the National Women's Council, is joining me for a series of podcasts as a co-host. Orla, I'm delighted to have you on board.
Thanks, Rory. And we're really delighted in the National Women's Council to be doing this with Reboot, because we think it's just so important to think that we really discuss what are the critical issues for women on International Women's Day. So, yeah, this is a great venture.
Yeah, I really think it is. And I suppose it's about, you know, we know we've lots of listeners on Reboot, and it is a platform and a media that people are listening to. And we really want to use it as a place whereby we can get diverse voices out there. And, you know, in terms of inequality, gender inequality, and all the different types of inequalities within that, that, you know, women are facing, is something that we really needs to be listened to, really needs to be talked about. And of course, we need to find solutions. We need to progress and change Ireland to become a genuine republic of equality for all. So maybe you want to set out, Orla, just today in terms of our panel and welcome them and set out what we've got today.
Absolutely. This is the first one, and I think it is really important that this podcast is about issues for disabled women in Ireland. And we're working together, and it's just brilliant that some of the women that we're working with are here on the panel. So you'll hear people in a few minutes, but we've Anne-Marie Flanagan, Eleona Jaychai, and Gladys O'Neill. And we're going to be talking about the issues that are really important for disabled women, and also what we want to see changed. And there's so much that we want to see changed. I mean, when we look at the statistics around disabled women in Ireland, I mean, they really are quite stark. And there's many areas that we don't have data on. But what we do know is that disabled women experience additional barriers in every area of society, whether it's about getting a job, in relation to, you know, much higher numbers experience violence. There's enormous barriers in terms of accessing health services, and also things like reproductive health. And then there's the whole issues in relation to care that all women experience inequality in relation to, disabled women experience it in much greater proportions. So that's really what we want to talk about. And yeah, I'm delighted that Anne-Marie and Eleona and Gladys are here to do that. So maybe we start with Anne-Marie, and maybe Anne-Marie, if you want to maybe say a little bit about, you know, what you see as the critical issues for disabled women now.
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks a million. And it's great to be here. I suppose there are a number of issues. I myself, I am a mother. I have a 9-year-old. I'm a mental health professional. I live in rural Ireland. And I suppose one of the a number of the things that I've learned throughout my life and my activism, I'm in my mid-40s, so I've been an activist now. I've been around for quite a while. And I suppose some of the issues are moving and some of those aren't changing at all. I would say that the issues around recognizing that disabled women are equal to other women continues to be an issue for everyone in society, from a policy perspective, from a gender perspective. Even, you know, you mentioned a number of issues there around, you know, violence against women. I call it the double glass ceiling in terms of career and employment, you know, always trying to be better than my peers. And yet not being seen as good as my peers. And that's quite difficult. So I suppose the language that we would use to help change that would be looking at reasonable accommodation. So what are the policies and laws that need to change so that, I suppose, disabled men and women are able to access society equal to others. So that's in terms of employment. It could be in terms of services and generic services that everybody uses, and then specific services that support us, depending on our impairment, to actually to have equality and to be able to engage. So for some people, it's personal assistance. For some people, it's sign language interpreting. For others, you know, it could be just signage and plain English, and ensuring that information is affordable or is made accessible to people. To be honest, sometimes when I'm asked this question, the issues feel so mammoth, it's almost difficult to actually put my finger on one thing. I just wanted to maybe give an example from my own lived experience. So, like, for example, I use personal assistants, and so I employ personal assistants to just enable me with to do things that I can't physically do on my own. And here we are now 30 years after the introduction of independent living and personal assistance, and there's no right to it. So there's this narrative going on, you know, taking the crumbs from the table, and, you know, depending on the change of government, they might, you know, see that as something as valuable. They might see something else as valuable. We still have, which is a horrific statistic, that out of 2.5 billion spent on supporting disabled people to access society equally, 90% of that is spent on institutionalizing people either through day services or to residential. And you see, that keeps convincing the general public that disabled people should be kept separate. And it's actually very difficult for the ordinary person to understand what equality looks like when our governments continuously separate and segregate, but then are getting fantastically clever at using what I would call equality language. So we have policy documents, we have public statements, we have, you know, we have legislation that's never commenced, but yet it uses equality and reasonable accommodation and human rights language. But when it comes to disabled men and women, we actually don't experience those laws equal to others, because we have other reasonable accommodation needs that Ireland isn't very good actually at implementing. And then we have the UN Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities, and there's a particular article that recognises the unique lived experience of the state. So I suppose that in itself, Ireland is about to report on that, but that gives us, I suppose, probably the best human rights platform to claim our rights that we haven't had heretofore.
Yeah, well, so well said, Maria. And Eleona, do you maybe want to say, you know, from your own perspective, what maybe you see as some of the issues?
Well, yeah, sure. Well, I am Eleona. I'm from the beautiful county of Galway. I don't want to repeat what Anne-Marie said. I just want to add perhaps what COVID highlighted mostly, in the sense of the inaccessibility of information, whether it's health procedures, whether it's businesses, whether it's whatever it may be, to highlight that disabled people and disabled women are also customers. So COVID highlighted the inaccessibility of websites to purchase food, to purchase services, to purchase medical things that you might need, you know, and how disabled people were forgotten, more or less. And then the issue of what COVID might have increased was domestic violence, and where are those support services when it comes to offering those to disabled women. So I would like to highlight that, domestic violence, and highlight the fact that, well, disabled people and disabled women are also customers of businesses, and that should not be forgotten.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the whole sort of narrative around COVID, it's been really hard, I think, to highlight the impact on women, and then to highlight the impact on disabled women is almost invisible. So yeah, I think that's just, yeah, so key. Gladys, do you want to?
Yeah, again, I just what everybody has said, you know, sort of thing, I would absolutely agree. But as an older woman, to highlight, you know, what happens to older women and poverty within disability is a key, you know. But again, it's you know, accessibility to everything is a huge problem. I would say, though, that for me personally, Zoom has been, even though the camera's not working and I can't work it out, has been absolutely key. It has made things possible that were not possible to me before. And so the areas that we're seriously worried about and concerned about can be aired. And, you know, that I'm getting to speak with women all over Ireland, you know, brilliant women, you know, fabulous, strong women who are telling their stories and advocating for for us all, for everybody, you know, in the to be inclusive and not to be seen as other. Mm-hmm. And my area that I have a strong interest in, again, is domestic violence and coercive control. Mm-hmm. And policy has to change. I can't, unless they're on board, the state policy. And what I hope that will happen, because it's so highlighted, you know, with COVID and with lockdown and what's happening, but rarely spoken about what happens to a disabled woman and all of the package, the layers that are involved. So what I'm hoping is that with Zoom and with, you know, being able to connect with people, that, you know, I'm working with the stakeholders to bring about change, you know, for in education about coercive control, in education about what happens to a woman, and with women with disabilities being the voice. So they're heard. And, you know, and I feel really passionate about it. And I think that this is an opportunity for us to bring serious change on a policy level. And so I'm hopeful. And all of the other things that we need, accessibility to everything. We are literally left out.
Gladys, if I may, this, yeah. You know, the COVID, there's good parts to it and there's negative parts to it. But if they could work out and produce a platform like Zoom that was accessible, and there's other platforms that partially or at least 80% accessible within a month when COVID hit, yes, the world, that shows that where there is will, there is ways. Absolutely. And that is important to highlight, and that we are connecting. And again, it highlights accessibility. It highlights accessibility of information, accessibility of rights, and accessibility of platforms so that our voice is heard and yes, actually listened, not just heard.
Yes, agree.
Gladys, can I come in there and just ask you maybe to expand a little bit, and maybe Eliona might like to as well, just around that issue of domestic violence and disability, and just, you know, why, you know, for obvious reasons it's important, but maybe just talk a little bit more about, you know, how that's impacting and what needs to be done.
Just 2 points quick and then I can put it to you. Violence against disabled women has been framed as a human rights concern in global level. And there's a massive volume of international research showing that disabled women are at higher risk of experiencing violence compared to other women, that we experience violence for a longer duration of time, and also that we experience a wide range of violences. So I think that goes to show how highlighted or how need of emphasizing this topic is. As opposed to Ireland, from my knowledge so far, there isn't that much research that highlights this, apart from violence in concern with reproductive justice and or inaccessibility of it. But it's also highlighted internationally that women's shelter, for example, or rape crisis centers or stuff like that, the information is not accessible. The locations aren't accessible for us to get into or seek the help. And then if we do, we are actually treated in different dimensions, or as there's double standards, and that should not be the case. But that's my knowledge. I need to dig deeper, but Gladys might want to add to this.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with everything that you've said. And I think that the idea, you know, that what my understanding is that it was rarely thought of, you know, that it was an area that I kind of would imagine that disabled women weren't in relationships. They weren't in, you know, they weren't out there, you know, sort of thing in relationships, intimate relationships. And so therefore they didn't have to look at this area, you know, or really delve into it deeply to see what was going on. And I think that what happens with the women that I've spoken to that have suffered, and my understanding is they're really not even understanding what coercive control is, you know, or that services were not for them, you know, because, and fear and shame, that the idea of even ringing a service, that it would, you know, the fear of it, or all of the things that are included, like a care package, their homes. You know, for a disabled woman to leave her adapted home is huge. You can imagine that a woman is not, this is doubly, it's not just walking out the door, because, you know, and hard and all that is for an able-bodied woman. But a disabled woman is leaving a care package, you know. So I would hope to see that a wraparound service would be there for women, you know.
And I think as well, Gladys, just that I think it's really important that, you know, the state recognises the intimate relationship. So, like, when a man or a woman is in a relationship with their other partner, and take women, for example, in our intimate relationships, the first thing we're asked if we have physical support needs is, what is our informal, and I put that in quotes, informal supports. And straight away, if those of us who are in relationships were to suggest that our partners offered us informal support, that's a bit of an opt-out then from the state to not provide us with services. Now, my partner is my lover and the father of my child. Mm. I did not get into a relationship so he could spend the rest of our lives together helping me have a shower, get dressed and washed, and that is the sum of our relationship. We wouldn't have lasted 5 seconds, I can tell you that, because that is not the legitimacy of our relationship. Mm. You know, and also, you know, we need to have a good old row without having to be near each other. So there are so many intimate things. Mm. But also, I suppose, as well, to advocate for the voice of disabled women who aren't in intimate relationships, but the law doesn't actually cover. So coercive control in Irish state law recognizes it in intimate partner relationships. But the reality is that disabled women are often hidden behind closed doors as a consequence of family and state and charity services. And that's a serious, serious issue. So again, that's probably very connected to the fact that we still have a ward of court system which dates back to 1871 under the, in quotes, the Lunacy Act, which is really offensive to people of different experiences and impairments. So family members who, for example, are really concerned and worried, they might get a wardship for their relative, but straight away, you're subhuman, you're dehumanized because you don't have any rights to speak up for yourself, and therefore the courts decide. That's one. But also the way the system provides services to people. People are locked in services. It's based on charity, as a mixture of charity and state funding, where the funding is given to the organization and the individual is voiceless. And I suppose for me, it was really, really obvious where disabled women and children are placed in Irish society. So rightfully, we were really angry, and as a state, mourning what happened to women and babies just recently. But if you were to dig down deep into that report, you would know that the majority of babies left into the mother and baby homes weren't left into adoption agencies. They were put into the mother and baby homes because they were seen as unadoptable. So from birth, for a lot of children, there was almost the normalization of abuse, and that disabled children experience abuse differently to non-disabled children and into their years. And then the other example, like when we heard about Grace, so like one of the most horrific abuses that happened, children in a home funded by states, by foster carers, was Grace, Marie, and all the other unnamed children. And like when that news broke, you know, thanks to Fergus Finlay, he decided as the CEO of a children's organization to give Grace a name so that at least we could stop down with that child with significant disability, as if her little body didn't matter in her feelings. And then the other part of this, which is abuse to the mother, that mother was told, and all the other mothers, she'd be better off if you put her into foster care. The state would take care of them. So I think it's really, really important that we really understand the unique experience of disabled children and women and how subhuman we can be treated.
But yeah. Anne-Marie, that goes back to the social constructions and highlights the fact that violence and disability and gender and so on are socially constructed. perhaps systems of oppression. And when you have the intersection between all of these, then you highlight other aspects of violence, for example, that people choose either not to see it, not to talk about, or those that have power not to do anything about it. You know, and that's why, I mean, even the misunderstanding of domestic violence, when people think immediately, oh, intimate partner. I mean, that's one type. Domestic violence means it happens home. It happens wherever your residence is.
Exactly.
But, you know, we like as the fact of this podcast that we're doing today, we're talking about gender-based violence. And just to take a compared example, for example, in Spain, domestic violence and gender-based violence have completely different meaning. And yet in Ireland, I think sometimes people use them interchangeably. Actually, domestic violence in Spain would mean violence against men, while gender-based violence means violence against women. But, you know, in the Irish context, it goes basically how the systems of oppression are and how culturally and timely they are related. It highlights the attitude of people and the fact that any accommodation provided is a two-way system. So it's a conversation between disabled people and those that have the power or those that are providing the services, I would argue.
I'm interested in asking the three of you because, you know, I'm really conscious there's a whole new conversation happening at the moment about care. It's happening in the Citizens' Assembly. It's happening as a result of COVID as well. And there's a lot of positives in that. But, you know, I'm thinking a lot about where are the rights of people, women, disabled women within that conversation on care. And also, if we're going to have a new conversation on care, how do we make sure that it's very inclusive of the rights of women, of disabled women? So I'm just interested to know the perspective from the three of you on that, because I do think it's going to be such a key conversation that's going to happen post Citizens Assembly recommendations. Anne-Marie, do you want to?
So I suppose I found that I was really upset, I would say. I am very disappointed at the, first of all, two things that happened. One, the focus on the Citizens Assembly and the complete absence of the recognition of disabled women as caregivers and the assumption that disabled women are recipients of care only. So I think that one is a bit dangerous and we need to resolve that. And that happens in a bit of sisterhood and solidarity with women, I think. I suppose if you look at the feminist movement without unpicking it and being too critiquing of it, the reality is that the feminist movement was built on, you know, quite privileged middle class women. And I am saying that. And that's where it's a bit stuck in Ireland, you know, so we do look at that. And I suppose the fact that there's a working group and we would see ourselves advising almost the experts on this issue with National Women's Council of Ireland, that is a great move. And, you know, we want to see, so, you know, we want to move into that integrative way of working so that, you know, if, for example, there is a seminar or a conference or a policy document, that we don't restrict the voice, so that I, as a woman, should be the voice of all women in talking about the issue of care, rather than a woman who is in a particular receiving a carer's allowance, that it's limited to that. So I think that's something that's really important. And I think also the other one, I suppose, that we need to highlight is, I suppose I'm really concerned that we would amend the Constitution to build care as a constitutional recognition. I think that is seriously dangerous. We are still recovering from colonialism. We don't have the maturity to recognize what our roles were. You know, it's very much a nationalist constitution. And so therefore, for me, it's to inherently recognize care. When care means something in such a limited way in this state is I don't feel is necessary. But until we legitimize the rights of people who need support constitutionally, then we could look at it. But to actually put the cart before the horse for me is concerning as a woman, as a mother, as a caregiver, and as a recipient of support as well. So I am concerned about that. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Anne-Marie. God, that's really interesting, I think, in terms of what you're saying about, because obviously that piece about the recognition of care. And Yeah, really interesting. Gladys, Eliona, do you want to come in on this? Or
again, I would say that I would absolutely agree completely with, again, with the, everything that has been said. But I think that the wheels change very, very slowly. And that could possibly change, you know, with a strong group of women, strong support and the support of the wider society to, you know, who are going to say, do you know, this is just not fair. This is just not good enough. If in other areas of your life in society, people be outraged, you know, absolutely outraged that the exclusion of women with disabilities and what their lived experiences are. And I think that there is real change about with that the women's voices of, with disability, with other areas, you know, the people that, you know, sort of the agencies that work within domestic abuse are very willing to listen to the voices, you know, the strong voices of women with disability. What do we want? What are we looking at? What are our needs without it being, you know, in that care, you know, giving, you know, sort of thing, that kind of, you know, as human beings, you know, that need support. But what does that look like? You know, what is, exactly are we talking about? What does it look like? So we have to be very clear, you know, and yeah. I think this is an opportunity for women, you know, with disabilities to get together, to really be clear about what we want to see, what we, you know, we need, you know, not be afraid to say what we need. There's nothing wrong with saying you need support, but that also that you are all of those things in a holistic way, a mother, a wife, a partner, all every kind of woman, you know, and that's what I would hope for.
Yeah. Rory, you wanted to?
I want to add something.
Oh, sorry, Eliona. Oh, yeah.
I just want to also highlight that we as disabled women are not a homogeneous group either. And there is layers and layers and layers of diversity of identities. Yeah. And we must not forget that.
Yes.
Because the care needs of somebody who is disabled, who's a woman, who is a member of LGBT plus community, who's an immigrant, who's this or that, are different. There's a lot of shared needs, but there are also differences. And I also wanted to highlight care as an evolving concept, because it's important not to have one definition for care 100 years ago than today. So let's evolve with the time. Let's apply those concepts with what's going on at the time and not leave disabled women in the 1950s while we are living in the 2021. So let's remind ourselves that. And also, we are a caring nation. How about we do care in the right way by providing care, giving care, and receiving care while respecting the autonomy, dignity, and choice of individuals.
Yeah, absolutely. Rory, do you want to?
I just wanted to briefly ask in terms of the issue of housing. It's one of the areas that we cover a lot on this podcast. And just maybe if any of you have a view on it or not, but like I was looking at the housing, the social housing waiting list, for example, and there's about 5,000 of that waiting list who are specifically related to either mental health in terms of intellectual disability, in terms of physical disability. It's listed that, you know, so disability and housing exclusion and housing inequality is clearly an issue we're not addressing in this country. And I wonder if any of you have views on that.
Oh, we do.
Oh my goodness. It's
is the question.
Yeah, it's such a serious issue because, like, for example, in 2005, the Disability Act was part of the Disability Act recognizes the need for departments to develop a strategy so that the needs of individuals would not get lost between departments. And for me, if I was to pick three departments that needed to speak to each other was housing, health and education. And they don't talk to each other as we would prescribe the how to do it. So at a local level, you might have a house coming up. The council are actually able to provide our local authority to somebody, but that person then needs some personal assistance, support hours, or needs something else. So they have to refuse that house. They have to refuse the house because the other section of the state is not talking to them. And then what's really devastating is that person ends up in a mix of part-time residential, this awful misuse of what we call respite care. And then you have, for example, family members going back to the care, you know, saying, oh, well, I might as well claim the carers allowance because I have to support you and, you know, I can't go out to work. And so then you have an issue of homelessness. You have people ending up in nursing homes. You have people, and then the state is still spending a profound amount of money institutionalizing somebody. And then I suppose the issue of homelessness and disabled people becomes conflated. And the idea that, you know, basically there needs to be a universal human rights approach to supporting disabled people to access housing, health and education.
I would like to start my point from that city councils or different counties in Ireland, they do have a plan. And in paper, it looks beautiful. Well, at least some sections of it, where the plan for accommodation to be provided to, say, for disabled people, and there is four different categories, as you listed them, they're worried about intellectual disabilities, physical, sensory, and so on. But what happened, you know, is that that plan is rolled over for another 5 years to come. So housing isn't being provided to disabled people. And then when it is provided, or perhaps it's put forward, then you are asked to provide a letter from your... you are asked to provide a letter from your consultant to identify what your needs are, which I think is bizarre. I see my consultant maybe every 2 years and hardly ever for more than 5 minutes. So how is that person to know what suits me? I mean, I am the best person to know what suits me for myself. So the application itself is ridiculous. You know, and then as Anne-Marie said, when it comes to even the opportunity to get a house, it's either in an area opposite where you live in now, and the facilities aren't provided in that area, so you have to refuse it if you get lucky to go as far at that stage. And then if you are a student, for example, where is that aspect of accessibility? So, I mean, disability or accommodation for disabled people is just as much as part of the overall crisis that is going on in the nation. But when there is planning on, when there is talks about building new houses, there's never talk about, you know, accommodation within those houses and giving us the choice of where we want to live. That's all about independent living. And thanks God, Ireland ratified CRPD, so they need to actually domesticate some of that law. They have to.
Yeah, absolutely. Gladys, do you have a view on it?
Yeah, at the moment, my understanding, and there's something being set up, is Dublin South County are involving disabled people within their decision-making. And that's coming about, I think, the end of March. That disabled people will be around the table. Fantastic. and their needs be, and hopefully being listened to, you know, because I think they were exempt from, somebody was deciding what was suitable for disabled people, but not the disabled people themselves. So the inclusion in the decision making, you know, I mean, being asked, it is so important that you're included within this. You know, and their voices are heard about the needs again of a disabled person. And so they are, Dublin South County are including in their plans, in their group, a committee set up to include people with disabilities. So hopefully that is a really positive. I don't know about other counties around the country, if so that is happening.
So that the service, the public service duty. It's great,
Yeah, if they change the idea that if you are a single person applying for council housing, then you are immediately sent into a studio, one bedroom house, as if we have no right to have in a future family or in a relationship or so on and so forth. Is the idea of what you said earlier, Gladys, is we are non-sexual people, or we don't have relationships, or whatever the stereotypes are. And I think it's time for the society to change their attitude, according to the times we're living.
Yeah, and I think, Aliona, I think comes well into just maybe in terms of the final piece, because the theme for this this International Women's Day is that the future is feminist. And I wonder if just the three of you, sorry, that's my dog. I wonder if the three of you could maybe just say, in terms of your hopes for the future being feminist, you know, what would be the main things you would say about that? And also how we can bring about that change.
Yeah, I suppose for me, I would like to see the National Plan for Women and a closer relationship from a state perspective around the intersectionality of women in terms of policies, whether it's healthcare, housing, education, that are specific, and domestic violence. What does that mean when we are talking about all women? But on a practical basis, what does reasonable accommodation really look like? You know, as a woman being involved in the women's movement for so many years, one of the things that I recognized in Ireland that we are actually adaptable when it comes to cultural change and shift. There is that, it's part of our history. I'm not saying we're getting it right to any woman listening who feels excluded, but we'll make an effort to include someone. But the minute we come to economic rights, wow, are we out the door as fast as we come? So we'll include you, disabled women, if you don't cost us. Otherwise, you're putting us out, because then we see the reasonable accommodation and looking at women's human rights. And if there is a cost to the exchequer, and we kind of go, is that value for money? Like, is she going to get a job? Or will she really have babies? You know, will she really get a job after we put all that money after third level education? And there is, I think, at the back of people's psyche, policymakers, the general public, that, you know, disabled people, and I'm very positive person. I have a fabulous life and I don't hold that. But there is this broader idea that maybe disabled women are still less than others. So because we need physical support, or if a woman needs sign language interpreting, you know, we wonder, you know, really is that value for money? So a feminist perspective would be that there's value in women, regardless of maybe the reasonable accommodation and the cost associated with it. And of course, the sisterhood from other women who don't identify as having a disability, but will go, oh, I wonder what that looks like for our sisters with disabilities. Thank you.
Thanks, Anne-Marie. Aliona?
Well, Gladys, do you want to go ahead? Because we...
Okay, Gladys.
The future, I think, for the feminist within women with disability and the future, I think is quite positive, because I feel quite empowered now that I am meeting all of these really interesting, vibrant, articulate, fabulous women with fabulous ideas about inclusion. That to me is women supporting one another, disabled women supporting one another, and wanting change for all of us, not just, you know. And obviously there's huge problems out there, we know that, but I think that the support that I see it as a future is in the support of one another as women, and understanding, we get it, we understand, we know what it's like, depending on your disability, you know, but we get it, we understand. And that, I think, therefore, that's, I see the future in us getting together, being very, very strong voice in what we want. Not like who tells us what we need what we want. And I'm hopeful. So I'd like to always a little bit of positivity. You know, I'm hopeful.
Aliona?
Yeah, well, I would like to start by saying Rome wasn't built in a day.
Yeah.
So each one of us that puts a brick into that wall and make sure that that is accessible, that is perhaps a reasonable accommodation provision to an individual, and we can then build a future inclusive feminist world. It's important to highlight the inclusivity in there and have inclusive equality, not integration, as we tend to use the words interchangeably. They're not. There's a big difference between the two concepts. However, I would like to make a specific plead, perhaps, to the young women of Ireland that have a disability to get part, to become part of any movement out there. Because even sometimes by just being there, you're turning heads, but you're turning heads because we need to raise our voices, we need to raise our presence, and we need to raise our involvement into things. And unless we talk and walk, no one is going to do things for us. So therefore, get involved as soon as you can, wherever you can. No step is too little and no word is too small. So go for it, and I hope to see you at some of the panels. Because I'm not going in.
Thanks, Aliona. Thanks. And I really want to say thanks to the three of you, Gladys, Aliona, and Anne-Marie. That was a really riveting discussion. And I think in terms of, the theme being the future is feminist, I think the three of you have just so powerfully said why disabled women's voices need to be at the centre of that future. And Aliona is so right. This is about an inclusive feminism. So massive thanks and huge thanks to Reboot for enabling us to.
Yeah, thank you so much, Orla, and thank you to Anne-Marie, Aliona, and Gladys. I also agree with Orla. I was really, I have to say, you know, blown away by the way you spoke. And I think that it sort of just sets out exactly as Orla said, you know, we need your voices and you are the change makers as well. And, you know the solutions, you know what needs to be done. And I was really struck by, you know, the idea again, it's something we talk about a lot in this podcast about, you know, we've all these great policies, but no implementation.
Yeah.
But also we lack fundamentally a human rights-based approach to our policies and to our people. And I think that this is about creating an inclusive equality and one that includes economic, social rights as central to this republic. And I know that you guys are going to get there. We're going to get there. And thank you so much and best of luck into the future.
And excellent. Thank you so much.
And just a shout out, we are going to be doing some more of these podcasts, Orla. I'm delighted, looking forward to them over the next while, putting it in terms of for supporting International Women's Day. And also just a shout out to our listeners and supporters. If you can, become a patron, go over to patreon.com/tortoiseshack. This is an independent media. We rely on you to cover the cost of production. If you can, sign up for whatever you can each month and support us to keep producing these and getting these vital voices out into the public to change this country. Thank you very much, and we'll talk to you soon.